Right, hello everybody. We've recorded some silence. Audacity is running, so I can start to read out the introduction that is written here on this piece of paper. Hi, I'm at the dentist at 10 a.m. I'll join you when I've finished. Here's the news. Welcome to podcast series 4, episode 20. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And I should mention that this is the Tux Radar podcast, series 4, episode 20, brought to you by the people who produce Linux Format. In this episode, we've got lots of news. We've got discoveries of the week or fortnight. We've got rants and raves. Speak your brains. We actually have some brains this week.
We do, yes.
How many brains?
Four.
Four brains. That's
incredible.
Wow.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Incroyable. Magnifique. Et le ballot ouvert. Or open ballots, as we say in England. If you like that sort of thing and you would like to have it in paper format or indeed in digital format via the magic of PDF and Zinio, which we know doesn't work on Linux. Sorry about that.
And the CERN issue has only just been put live on the Ubuntu Software Center, and that wasn't our fault. We submitted it almost 3 weeks ago. So I guess they only have one person working on it, and that one person was polishing the icons for the 12.10 release.
So that's another reason why not to like Ubuntu.
Yes, right. we love Ubuntu.
We love Ubuntu.
I got good news about
Ubuntu. Didn't you get the email?
Ubuntu is a very important tranche of our digital strategy moving forward.
Sorry, sorry.
So anyway, yes, the magazine, we've just finished the latest issue. And that was about... what was that about? It's about Linux and free software and stuff like that.
It was
Raspberry
awesome.
Pi. Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi Project.
Yes, Ben did some awesome stuff.
Yep. So good you forgot about them.
Yeah.
What was that? What were the awesome moments in that?
We hook up the GPIO pins to get your Raspberry Pi outputting to stuff other than a telly. We use it as a media player. We use it to rejigify your camera. All sorts of things.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And there's OpenPixel Cup goodness, and there's many, many tutorials, and Graham reviews Ubuntu.
Yes.
Wow.
Don't want to spoil the surprise on that one.
So you can subscribe. You can buy that on all good Ubuntu magazine PDF stores when they eventually get around to it, or you can go to WH Smith's, or you can subscribe at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. And that's a really excellent deal. It's something like £51.92 for the whole year. Ah, right, which brings us to news.
Awesome. So, back to the Raspberry Pi briefly. The drivers, the graphics drivers for Raspberry Pi have now been open sourced. So, good news there.
It's fantastic news. I mean, I know there's some kind of grey area over what it is and how committed Broadcom are to it. But when you look at like Linus Torvalds complaining about NVIDIA and how open they are with the GPU performance or how unopen they are, I think it's hopefully the beginning of a cascade of people having faith in open source software and being able to release their IP without worrying about their competitors so much.
Yeah, and Raspberry Pi Foundation claim, and we haven't checked this, that it's the first system on a chip based on ARM that runs entirely open source software on the ARM side. Just to clarify on the grey area, that there have been some quite negative comments about it. Phoronix described it as crap.
Why do you know why?
Yes, the reason is there's been some confusion over exactly what a graphics card driver is. Now, what Raspberry Pi have said is it's the code that runs on the ARM core. So all that code is now open source. However, the actual graphics processor itself has code that it runs. And that they describe it as microcode, but it's basically...
I guess that's a binary blob.
Exactly, that's a binary blob, which they haven't open sourced. Now, in the case of the video core driver, that binary blob that runs on the graphics core actually contains almost the entire OpenGL implementation. the bit that runs on the ARM core is essentially just a shim to allow it to load. So the sort of the simplest way of looking at this is this announcement will allow other implementation or other systems to implement OpenGL on the Raspberry Pi. For example, if you're working on BSD, you could easily implement the OpenGL. But what you couldn't do is allow other things to run on the GPU. For example, it wouldn't help you if you wanted to implement OpenCL. So that's basically what it means. And so there is still some stuff that could be open that isn't, but as you say, it's fantastic news. It's one step along the path. It's not the end of the road, but it's a big step along.
Excellent explanation.
Thanks.
I got everything. Understood everything.
Good. So moving on, Wayland has reached 1.0. Wayland is the replacement for the aging X graphics system. In short, this is really just stabilizing the API. It's not quite usable yet.
I mean, isn't this, I think I remember, almost 2 years ago or something, whenever Mark Shuttleworth said the next version of Ubuntu will switch to Ubuntu. I mean, Wayland, you know, it's another, let's not have a go at Canonical, but it's another one of another example of them failing to deliver on a promise.
It's true, but it's not only them. I mean, Fedora was supposed to have it and other ones as well.
Is it just one person working on it?
I have no idea. I would imagine a few.
It's an important project because obviously the whole X system is kind of over-engineered and a little bit past its sell-by date when it comes to devices like the Raspberry Pi having to run a complete X system, whereas Wayland's much more native, much, you know, something like OpenGL performance will really help it on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. And I suspect it'll go along one of those things that will really struggle and sort of slowly along until it gets to the point where it's a production system. Then suddenly all the Fedora or the Canonical people are going to start putting much more time into it. It's going to get much more testing.
Can't wait to see how stable Unity is on an early version of Wayland.
Still 14.10 is going to be good.
Yes.
And it'll be on how many 100 million PCs?
A billion, million, bajillion.
It's a big number.
It's great news, though, 1.0. It's great that it's moving forward.
Yeah, and with the stable API, it means people can start to build more on top of it, even if it's not fully stable yet. As we mentioned before, Ubuntu 12.10 has been launched. I know you've been using it a bit, Graham.
I actually spent quite a long time using it. I used it day in, day out for, you know, 10 days or so, or however long it's been now. I just thought I'd leave that awkward silence there, because that's how it makes me feel.
It's that awkward silence while you're sitting there waiting for it to do something.
Yeah. I've found it, I suppose the main issue is performance. On my regular Core 2 Duo machine with an NVIDIA graphics card, it's woeful. Comp is very unstable, crashes, and when it does work, things like the screen refresh rate seems terrible. Terrible performance, especially compared to KDE or, in fact, anything else. There's lots of things I could say about it. I don't really want to turn it into a big Ubuntu whinge. I do appreciate that they're trying to do something different. And there are elements of that in things like the pervasive searching of your Google Docs. But really, I think the Amazon search results embedded within the normal Dash searches is a massive fail. I don't like the results themselves. I don't want to be confronted with advertisements from Amazon every time I'm searching for the system config panel. And there are lots of other small niggles that just make this one of my least favorite Ubuntu releases for a while.
So for Linux format readers, you can skip that. That's bread in a review.
Yeah, you can skip those two pages. Yeah,
just don't read them.
I was just wondering, and this is purely hypothetical, but if it could be a ploy to try and get hardware manufacturers on board, because a lot of hardware manufacturers actually make money from Windows when they put it on, they put extra trial wear, et cetera, and they make money back on that and they can knock down the price of the hardware because of it. With this, at the moment, if you click on it, the money goes to Ubuntu, but that would be, you know, if you were a hardware manufacturer making laptops, say, you could change that to your own key. When people did it, it would be a little bit of extra money to come in, like they do with, well, obviously Amazon's own, but with the Kindle. You can get it cheaper if you have adverts enabled. I mean, Amazon there have valued it. I think it's $10 more expensive if you have the adverts turned off.
I wish
that's worth paying for.
Yeah, I wish I'd. I haven't brought it, unfortunately, because it's for a feature we're working on this version. But I actually asked Richard Stallman about this, and Richard Stallman sent a fantastic reply just this morning about what he thought about Ubuntu's Amazon integration, and I'm not even going to try and paraphrase it because he put it so much better than I could. But he wasn't for it. He didn't think.
That's weird.
I mean, I think the point he made was that, you know, there's a precedent in free software that it's open and that you don't do this kind of thing, even though you can. And it is about choice in this instance. And I think that's what's so frustrating. I have absolutely no problem at all with an Amazon lens. No problem at all. Yeah. I just don't like the choice being taken from me. And like so much else with Ubuntu, they've had a great idea. They've implemented it, but there are big shortcomings in moving to do it so quickly. I wasn't going to have a rant about Ubuntu.
Okay, so moving on to another distribution. Mandriva is now open, Mandriva.
Hooray.
Woo.
I didn't see this news. What does it mean?
A new name.
That's about it.
This is what we thought was going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the company has been dying for a while in whatever the French equivalent of bankruptcy protection is. So they open sourced the code, whatever. They've invited the Mageia developers to join some sort of foundation with them. The Mageia developers have said, no, thank you.
Yeah. We're doing fine. We're second or third most popular distribution.
Yeah.
Le premier distro en France.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've been using it. Both Rosa and Mageia have now surpassed Mandriva. I mean, they've taken the code to new levels. And, well, it's good that it's carrying on as a community project. I just don't think it's that relevant anymore.
No. And maybe Mandriva has become a pretty good example of what happens to a distribution when you have a certain kind of managerial attitude towards making money for the distribution. I mean, when they got rid of Gael Duval, when the whole emphasis seemed to be to take advantage of putting Mandriva in French institutions, it seemed like a good business plan, but at the same time, they threw out the baby with the bathwater in that community distribution that was so popular. And I think this is what's happened. There's no momentum in Mandriva to carry the distribution through the times when the money dries up.
Yeah. But I think it does also highlight how the advantages to open source projects, because if this had been proprietary project, it would have died. You know, what was quite a good system would have died along with the company. What's happened is other organizations have taken it and moved it forwards as the original organization stalled. So
yeah.
Users have still got a great system that they can use.
Yeah, maybe Mageia is far more popular as a result than it ever might have been had Mandriva been slightly more successful.
Yeah. Okay, quite a lot's been happening in the patent and, regard to Apple, really. So we'll just skip through that news, as we can't really ignore it. You may or may not care that the iPad Mini has been launched. It's basically a small iPad.
Clever name.
Yeah. However, the Goofone Mini has also arrived. For a mere $99, you can get, it's a dual-core quite nifty-looking device, really. That's running Android with this iPhone skin. To be honest, if they did it without the iPhone lookalike skin for Android, I'd be tempted to get one.
And isn't the Nexus 10 or whatever it's going to be on the cards sometime soon?
Yeah, in the next few days, I believe.
I mean, hopefully that'll be cheaper than the iPad Mini, which I think is somewhere like £250 or £260, or maybe the same price, for probably a much more powerful platform and, you know, a decent 7 and 10-inch options for Android.
Yeah. But Goofone is also worth mentioning as they're the manufacturer that patented basically the iPhone 5 based on leaked iPhone 5
I remember them.
images. And I believe are pursuing it through the Chinese courts. So we'll see what happens there.
I suppose there's the advertising on Apple's main page.
The apology.
Yes. Apple have been forced to make, well, we call it an apology.
I couldn't see any apology in the word.
Very sorry.
Yeah, they fail to use words like very and sorry or apologise.
Well, Tim Cook crying, that's what I wanted to see.
But they did feel it important to mention some of the cases where Apple has won. They said in this case, in the UK court, Samsung was shown not to infringe on Apple's patents. And so they've had to put up this apology saying, we said Apple copied us, but really they didn't. However, at the bottom, they've put, well, kind of, but these courts have agreed with us. But they've neglected to mention the court cases where in other countries where the judge hasn't agreed with them. So, for anyone who's not aware, in South Korea, okay, it may not come as much of a surprise, but in South Korea, Samsung didn't copy Apple. In Japan, Samsung didn't copy Apple. In the Netherlands, a recent court ruling has said that Samsung didn't copy Apple. None of these are mentioned in their list of cases where...
Excellent.
Where they say that Samsung may have copied Apple. And even in the US, the US Patent Office has now said bounce back probably isn't a patent. It's still a tentative and not a binding ruling, but that was what a lot of the damages were awarded for, probably, since the jury didn't really tell us what
the $1 billion.
Yeah. And in more American legal news, Americans are now legally allowed to jailbreak smartphones, but they're no longer legally allowed to unlock them, and they're not allowed to jailbreak tablets.
Are they still allowed to carry guns?
They're still allowed to carry guns. You can shoot whichever electronic device you like.
Fine.
As long as it
by accident doesn't unlock it.
Yeah, this is a result of the exemption clause in the DMCA.
What a weird world. I mean, so that supposedly you can do it as long as it's not sidestepping whatever protection system. So the unlocking is doing that, whereas...
Well, no, this is actually separate to that. In the DMCA, they said you're not allowed to bypass protection unless the Library of Congress grants an exception. And they do this in, I think it's 3-year batches. And previously they'd granted an exception to unlocking, but that's now expired. And they said, we think unlocking's okay. Not okay anymore. But now we've decided you can jailbreak them, as long as it's a smartphone, not a tablet.
Oh, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. In these, you are allowed to remove the protection from ebooks if you need to do it for... Well, it's a bit ambiguously worded. They say you can remove it if it doesn't allow accessibility, so audioing and that sort of thing from an ebook if you're blind, etc. But it doesn't necessarily state that you have to be blind and need the thing to do it, yeah, I believe. Yeah.
You can close your eyes.
Yeah. But
close your eyes while you're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm cured.
So that's our roundup of legal news for their fortnight. And just back to Linux briefly with the last piece of news. There's potentially a problem in the X4 file system. The report's been going up and down around the web. Initial reports said it was a problem to do with journals being replayed. And there were some massive lists of kernel versions that said, everything's going to die. The developers have looked into it a bit more and said, well, actually, probably everything's not going to die, but they're not 100% sure what the problem is. So keep an eye out for the news in the next week or two and find out whether or not your X4 file system is about to die. But don't panic, it's probably not.
If your machine still turns on.
Yes. So that's the news for the fortnight.
Hey.
Oh, did I forget one? Oh, yeah, sorry.
There's so much news.
Just to prove that DRM is definitely evil, Amazon have remotely wiped a Norwegian's Kindle and refused to tell her why. And then silently turned it back on without telling her why.
I think it was someone like Cory Doctorow highlighted the issue. I mean, used to thinking of your book collections on your bookcases, you know, and books look good on bookcases. They're yours.
Yeah.
And you have them on your Amazon Kindle and you try and nurture the same feeling of a collection. And then all of a sudden one day you turn it on and it's all gone.
Yeah.
It's dreadful.
Like the Tower of Cups.
Yes.
Yeah. Just disappears. You spend ages with your plastic cups from the coffee machine. You build up a tower that's getting on for like 6 or 7 feet high, and then one day the cleaners come in and it's just gone.
Yeah, and obviously they can do this because technically you don't buy an ebook, you buy a license to use it with certain conditions. However, someone pointed out on Hacker News, and they're not a lawyer and I'm not, so take this with a massive pinch of salt, but they've said that you don't click license this ebook, you click buy an ebook. And in UK law, certainly there's a good chance that a judge would side with a consumer saying no, you clicked buy, not license. Yeah. They shouldn't be able to delete it.
Yeah.
But it's not been contested in court. It'd be interesting. I'd certainly find it very interesting if that case came.
It's a strange thing that it seems to be that on the digital world you're not buying anything else anymore. You're just sort of hiring it, whether it's your iPhone, whether it's your iPad and our books. So you pay for it and you haven't got complete ownership of this particular item.
Yeah.
That's a little rubbish, isn't it? Or just me?
I think it can work well and it can work badly. For example, with Spotify, I think it works really well. You buy a license to listen to whatever music you want to. Whereas with the Kindle ebook system, I think it works quite badly. You buy access to certain books that can then be revoked at any point. If you could say buy access to a library of all Kindle ebooks that you could then read and pay a monthly subscription for.
And it depends on the price, you know, the same with kind of Adobe's Creative Suite pricing. So they're going to do a license where you can use it for a month or for 12 months. You always have the latest version. Now, Creative Suite is something like £2,000 if you want to buy it. But if you need to use it for a project for a month and you get a license to use it for 6 weeks for £100, then that's reasonable too. The cynical side of it is that you know why they're licensing it to you is so that the license can expire and you have to buy it again.
Yeah.
That's ruining my discovery of the 4 months.
Sorry. Thanks for that news. That was fantastic news. Let's move on to discoveries. Anyone want to go first?
As we're talking about ebooks,
Continuity.
I'm not sure whether we reviewed this open source application.
We haven't got a reviews editor anymore, so who knows?
Fine. In Linux Forum magazine, it's called Calibre or Calibre. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce that. Calibre or Calibre. And what it is an application that allows you to manage your ebook library.
I don't remember
reviewing it.
I pitched a tutorial on it back when I was working for you freelance and didn't do it in the end.
But I think we should really, it's a really nice application where basically, you know, that you have, if you licensed an ebook, you have a reader that reads that particular format of ebook and then you struggle because you get different titles with different formats.
Yeah.
And then you have to download or get a different application to read that particular ebook.
Yeah.
But this one unifies all those formats. It actually reads every single format. And all you have to do is to set the application right at the beginning when you first launch it. And it's an open source application. And it reads an infinite amount of different formats of ebooks. And not just that, it allows you also to administrate the your collection or your library
as if it
was a proper shelf, and it changes the metadata. So if you're looking, it allows you to change the metadata on the ebooks. So if you say, for instance, if you're searching for a particular book, but you can remember the title or whatever, you look for a keyword on the text and it finds it and so on and so on. So it's a really nice application. I've been trying to find something like that because I still find reading on the tablet a little bit difficult on any ebooks. So I thought probably I'll give it a go on the desktop. But I found Calibre. Anyway, check it out. It's a really good tutorial on the website as well if you want to learn how to use it, how to set it up from the very beginning so everything is...
Maybe we should do a tutorial in the magazine now.
You didn't mention it, or you sort of touched on it, but it can actually convert stuff between different formats as well.
Convert formats, it's true. Yeah.
And another thing it can do is convert non-ebook formats, so a doc or an ODT file, into an ebook format so you can read it on your ebook, or if you wanted to publish it on an ebook store.
Exactly. It's really cool.
On a side note, did you see that the European Union or something is compelling Amazon to start charging VAT on their ebook sales, which currently they don't, or they charge at the 2% Luxembourg rate?
Does that mean they're going to pay tax in this country?
Well, no, it's the VAT on... It might mean that they pay for the VAT on ebooks in the UK.
No, it'll make them pay it in Luxembourg.
Right.
The EU is trying to say that Luxembourg should impose a 15% VAT on ebooks. They're also France has got a low VAT on ebooks, and they're having a crack at them as well. And another country, possibly Belgium, I can't remember.
But did you also see that when Amazon's negotiating with authors, they their contract, if you're a UK-based author, includes 20% VAT? Yeah. So Amazon takes an extra 20% because they're saying to the authors in the UK that they're paying the 20%.
Scumbags. Incredible.
Yeah. This is going to be a score for the newly married Luxembourg royal family couple. I forget exactly, because that's going to be an absolute barrel of money for them.
Yeah.
And considering Luxembourg consists of two cows and a house, that'll go quite a long way.
Did the cows live in the house?
They live just outside. Maybe they'll get their own house now. They can build a house for these two cows.
Back in the house.
But don't the cows sell milk to one another? And the financial services industry that's grown up to service loans on milk is now worth $54 billion a year.
Yeah, that's actually done from Switzerland, but run through Luxembourg for tax purposes.
Brilliant. Anyway, yeah, Caliber. My second discovery was I discovered how easy it is to convert a professional person that uses any other platform into Linux. It seems quite easy. Even though I'm not the most technical person regarding computers, it was fairly easy to sort of explain this professional guy who is a civil engineer that normally uses AutoCAD and on Windows and a Windows platform, how he can do that on Linux. And it took only about 1 hour to basically install Ubuntu, the latest version of Ubuntu, install the LibreCAD or whatever it was, I can't remember. And he was just fascinated by the fact that he was liberated from all the rubbish that comes along with the previous platform. Apart that his particular laptop, ran faster on using Ubuntu than using whatever Windows version he had on his computer. So it just seemed a little bit easier just to explain, oh, you do this, you do that. And so, because I don't know, because they're a little bit more educated, I don't know, but it seems easier for them to assimilate the information. And that's that. That was my other discovery. And using Ubuntu, so not everything is wrong about Canonical.
It's not. Canonical are good. They've done great things for Linux.
But there you go.
Okay, I'll go next. My first discovery has absolutely nothing to do with Linux whatsoever, but it's quite interesting nonetheless.
It's okay, we've had a strange amount of Linux-relevant stuff so far.
I found out recently which M&S store sells the most chicken tikka masala. Have you got any guesses?
Paris.
Birmingham. Is it Birmingham New Street?
Not Birmingham New Street.
Oh. Milton Keynes.
It's not Milton Keynes.
No.
It's actually the store on the Champs-Élysées in Paris.
Oh,
good guess. So in your face, every French person who's ever complained about British food.
Oh, yeah, because that's the most popular British dish, isn't it? Chicken tikka masala.
Yeah. So.
That's all those hot English au pairs going down there for lunch.
Sacre bleu.
So my second discovery is slightly more technical. I was using Arduino Nano, which is a great bit of kit, but it doesn't have as many ports, input and output ports, as I needed. So I just got a little I2C port expander. It's a great little chip. It costs it's less than a quid. And with that, I got another 16 ports. Brilliant. Just plug it in. Takes two wires, two analog output wires to run the I2C protocol. And another 16 ports for about 90 pence.
And how difficult is it to program for it? Is there like a library for Arduino and you just use it like the standard ports?
You use them slightly differently to the standard ports. You write the 16 ports in it and you write them 8 ports at a time.
Right.
You can just write a byte, basically, to the ports. It's completely trivial to use.
Awesome. Brilliant. Excellent discovery.
And because it's I2C, you can complete... because it's I2C, you can keep daisy-chaining them if you needed more ports.
I think I remember a tutorial Nick wrote on that I2C chips.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Shall I go? Mine's kind of... Yeah. Do you want to go first, Andrew?
Mine is a discovery from last week that I forgot to mention. So it doesn't feel right to leave it to last because it's like 2 weeks old.
Okay.
All right then. My discovery was, I knew he was there, so it wasn't really a discovery.
This is Jesus, is it?
He's always been in my heart.
I've always known he was there.
For a few days before I actually stumbled across it physically, I knew that there was a statue of Alan Turing in, is it Sackville Gardens?
Sackville Baggins' garden.
Sackville Baggins' Underhill in Manchester, near where the gay hobbits live.
No, I'm not saying anything about this. I'm not involved in this conversation today.
So yeah, Alan Turing. And the statue doesn't really look all that much like him, unfortunately. But it's nice that he's there. He's sitting outside the between the gay bars and the one a building of one of the University of Manchester's buildings. And he's just,
what is he doing?
He's holding an apple in his hand.
Ah,
he's looking a bit thoughtful. And there's some sort of inscription which is in. Encrypted as if it were encrypted on the Enigma machine, on the whatever the German thing was called. And apparently the sculptor buried his old Amstrad computer in the gardens near the spot where the sculpture is.
Yeah.
As a sort of tribute to him being awesome. And there were a couple of people there, like, well, I got my photograph taken sitting next to Big Al. And there's a couple of people there looking at me like, what's this bloke doing?
Like, don't you know who this is? Don't you know? You wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him.
Yeah. Fools.
So he's holding an apple.
Yeah.
And so the sculpture is not going to get done for copyright infringement of some company's logo or something.
I think it was dismissed, but wasn't there some conjecture that the Apple logo came from Turing's apple?
Was it?
Yeah.
But I think Apple in the end said it wasn't, that they just chose the apple because it was
Macintosh.
Clean.
Because it was Newtonian.
Yeah, I suppose so. That leaves me, which is I've got an audio synthesizer related discovery, and it's a synthesizer that's being developed for the Raspberry Pi, which is particularly awesome. The guy that's creating it, Phil Aitken, is developing it all in C, and it's still got a way to go. But so far, it looks like turning the Raspberry Pi into a complete kind of fully fledged synth. With kind of virtual analog and sampling and other kinds of phase and FM distortion synth engines all built in. So it's looking like it'll be the equivalent of like £1,000 Roland workstation on a £25 Raspberry Pi. I think take a look at the YouTube videos because it already sounds really good. And he's also, I've not seen these things before, but he's set it up with a really cheap LCD TV that seemed to cost like £25 on eBay from South Korea. So the TV's like 4 or 5 inches across, and he's got his GUI running on that. So he's got the GUI and the Raspberry Pi all together in a box that's like the size of two packs of cards, making really awesome sounds with a MIDI interface on the side. I think he plans to make a Kickstarter project out of it to create standalone boxes, but it's really cool what you can do with the Raspberry Pi. I know that he's having problems. I've been emailing him a couple of times this week. He is having problems with the latency and dealing with ulcer. But hopefully he can get that stuff ironed out. And it'll be a really good little synth. And another reason to love the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
And that's it. There are discoveries.
Yay. Yay. That brings us seamlessly to the about 4/5 of the way through reminder. Still to come, Speak Your Brains and Open Ballot.
Speak Your Brains. It's awesome that people have written in. Thank you. The first one is from James Erickson. Now, this is good timing for today because today is the official release date of Windows 8. Anyway, he sent me a link to a blog post he made, which is a very good blog post. It's titled, No Thanks, I Got Linux. On October the 26th, Windows 8 hits the store shelves. I've said it before, that compared to Vista, Windows 8 doesn't completely suck. I stand by that. I'm going to spend $79.99 for a... Am I going to spend $80 for a copy? No, not me, thanks. See, I got Linux. It's hard to express what Linux has done for me. I've learned more with Linux than I ever did with Windows. I've been part of dynamic communities that have engaged in passionate arguments, clever discussions, and crazy flame wars. Like family, you take the crazy, and that would be me, with the funny. Instead of just allowing me to try and make things work on my own, there were those who tried to nudge me along the right path, even when I didn't want to see it. I have undying gratitude for those who are willing to share their time and experience with me, even though I never knew them in real life. So on October the 26th, 2012, that's today, instead of giving Microsoft $79.99 for Windows 8, I'm going to donate the same amount to the Linux distro I use the most. I invite you to join me in doing this. I don't really care which distro or all family. If you'd prefer, donate to a specific open source project instead, as long as you give something that lets PayPal, Amazon, or Flutter know that something's going on that day. If you can't give monetarily, at least spread the word. I want the Linux community to show Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Oracle that we matter, we care for each other, and there's a lot of us, a lot more of us than they think. If you can contribute, I hope you'll email or tweet whomever manufactured your machine so they know you use their hardware running a Linux kernel. Thanks for taking the time to read this, and thanks for your support.
Yay!
That's a really great message.
That's fantastic.
26. Yeah, so it is today. So it is today. It's a really great idea. Maybe, yeah.
Do you mind if I copy that and translate it to Spanish and then post it as well?
No, of course not. There's his email and the link anyway.
I just need the email.
Another one from Richard Klinker. Graham, here's a couple of OpenSUSE thoughts relating to our last podcast. Firstly, on the subject of mission statements, I too found the KDE one to be meh. However, I find myself reading the OpenSUSE one all the way through and then reading the community statement too. Here's the link to the OpenSUSE strategy page. I'm not sure what it is, but to me their effort just seems a bit more genuine. I've not read it, but I'll have to put the link in the notes. Secondly, relating to KDE on netbooks, I've got OpenSUSE 12.2 installed on my HP Mini 110. It defaulted to a sensible desktop activity rather than an usual netbook one, which is very welcome. What's more, after a little tuning of the desktop effects, it runs really well and looks pretty good. I'd say it's well worth a look in comparison to Kubuntu, as it's very usable. You'll have to excuse all the OpenSUSE love, but SUSE 7.1 was my first Linux distro. I'm quite fond of it. Thanks again for the superb podcast. I had a couple of emails about the Kubuntu experience on it's KDE's fault on netbooks. Quite a few people have had the same problem. How many more? Two more. One from Paul Gideon Dan. Hello, team. Yes, you read the subject line right. The subject line is Speak Your Brain's LXF language bias. Blatant language bias in LFX. Must be a different magazine. Cry Mutiny. Someone at LXF Towers clearly has a penchant for Python. Not a single mention of Ruby in sight. Not even in the big Vim versus Emacs, KDE versus GNOME debates you featured recently. But in the world of scripting languages, it's undeniably Python versus Ruby. Despite the Perl community's best efforts, I'll add to undermine, their heyday is clearly in the past. Sorry, Mike. Python arrived on the scene earlier than Ruby, but just you have a look into Ruby and you'll find something truly beautiful. A consistent world made purely of objects and without all the ugly underscores. Plus we have Rails, which runs Twitter, GitHub, Basecamp and countless others such trendy sites. Also, enough of the Pulse Audio bashing, thank you very much. I don't really get it. It's worked perfectly for me from day one. I haven't had the slightest trouble with it since I installed it on my Arch system more than a year ago. I never had any trouble with Alcery either, but Pulse Audio promises extra goodies to come, just like System D. Also, do a feature on Qt Quick, because it's just awesome. Far more awesome than HTML5. What is Tizen thinking? Finally, I'm still on the Galactic exclusive Linus Torvalds issue. So if you've already done all the above in the issue or the latest, I'm sure you'll be sensible enough to ignore my ravings. Thanks, Paul.
Let's do the opposite of ignoring those ravings. Let's try and get some Ruby into the magazine.
Yeah. In fact, just this morning we were talking about doing some Ruby, so hopefully we'll do some Ruby not too soon. It's not too far.
In the not too distant future.
That's it. Thanks, yes. Andrew.
I still think languages roundup.
Yeah.
English is just the best, obviously.
Yes. If you'd write it, then
I'd write it.
Okay. You heard it here first. It is a good idea. Okay, final one from Joshua Beck. The Linux package management system is a fast and easy way to install safe, reliable software. Not having to search long and hard through the web, missing DLL files or programs laced with malware. This is all thanks to the files you need being in a convenient package, just one apt-get install away. However, one thing that annoys me is D-level packages. When building programs from source, it's usually necessary to install that -dev version of packages that are already installed. I'm aware D-level packages are designed to minimize the size of packages, but in an age where network bandwidth and storage space are becoming more and more abundant, would it not be easier to simply include all the files in the main package? I don't know.
I think it is the point that I think it is the point that so few people actually compile stuff these days that it would be completely wasted for about 90% of people, I think. And even then, you compile only against a small percentage of what you've got in your system.
I think, I agree with you. I don't think there's any reason to include the dev packages, but I do wish the devs, with the distributions I try and install the dev packages on, was a little bit easier to understand. I mean, they don't often always chase all of the dependencies you need to actually build a package. It'd be nice if you wanted to build whatever it is you're trying to build, that there was an easy way of grabbing all the source code and easily understanding what's and what is where, so it's easy to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've never actually used them, but shouldn't that be what the deb source and RPM source files are?
Yeah. And that's what the dev packages do in Ubuntu. That's one thing Arch is very, very good at. Using Pacman, you can install all the source files and all the build scripts that were used to build the original packages.
Okay.
Excellent, Speak Your Brains. Perhaps the best Speak Your Brains ever. So thank you very much. If you want it to continue next month, please send me your brains.
Without further ado, let's move on to Open Ballot. Not really a ballot this time, more of a chat. So, as we've already heard, this week we'll see the release of Windows 8. We want to know what you think the Linux community can do this time around to bring dissatisfied Windowsers into the Linux fold. Is it all about the hardware, or should we emphasize the community? Should Linux users or Linux companies lead the charge? Should we target businesses or home users? Let us know your views and we'll read them out. So we didn't really ask a yes or no question, so there's no tally. There's just a general sort of, well, like I say, just a chat. It's like being on Alan Partridge on the sofa. I have scribbled around some bits in red pen. Wet Mogwai says, his header is learning curve. He says, this is the first time since 1995 that Windows has had a steep learning curve.
So, that's a good point.
So they've always had the start button and the learner. But I don't get what the fuss is about removing the start button. People seem to think that it's the end of the world and stuff. But anyway, first time it's had a steep learning curve. So usually it makes sense to the average non-computer person to stay with what they know. They don't want to learn something new. Most modern Linux GUIs are close enough to the old Windows that it might be easier to get people to consider it now that Windows has turned into something completely alien to them.
Mm.
Fair point.
As long as it's not Ubuntu.
Or GNOME 3. Failing Whiteley says, developers, developers, developers. Woo! Blah, blah, blah. If the reports of dropping all the dev technologies that MS has built up over the past decade, for example, .NET and Silverlight, are true, then offering a stable development platform is key. Added to that, the ease to deploy your software compared with some locked down MS version of an app store could really make the difference. Things like the Quickly framework on Ubuntu, for example, could really make it a dream for people who want to try out an app on Linux easily. So if you're a developer, it's going to be easier to try stuff out on Linux than it is on Windows 8.
Probably.
Okay. Linux Store Ken W703 says, how about a retail store where customers could try out PCs and laptops with a variety of preloaded distros? Online stores do a great service to the community, and indeed we featured a couple of new Asus laptops that are going to have Ubuntu pre-installed on them, although sadly they won't be available in the UK. But if you're German, good luck to you. Online stores do a great service to the community, but many customers don't want to buy something they can't see and touch first. I think that's very true.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if you go into the local PC world and you see Linux laptops running next to Windows, and you see the new Metro interface, and then you see, I don't know, any Ubuntu, any Linux desktop, it's going to look preferable. Nothing wrong with Metro, but
no.
Just don't think it's ideal for desktops.
But as the previous commenter said, as Wet Mogwai said, this, if you're having to make a choice, then you actually have to make a choice.
Yes,
you have to think and be aware of the things that you can choose between. Mike O says, hardware, get a distro like 12.04 on supported high-end hardware. Presumably this would be in one of those shops. The focus has been on getting Linux running on low-spec kit, which means that consumers think of Linux as inferior.
Yeah, that's true.
What kind of machine did you show your mates, your architect fellow?
It was a Toshiba Satellite, but it wasn't new. It was about 5 years old.
All right.
I think that is the problem, isn't it, regarding the desktop, is if the devices don't come preloaded with any version of Linux. it's difficult. It's difficult for a consumer to really make a choice of, I don't know, changing the operating system into this environment. And what you said, if they see it, even if they see it on the shelf, they might go, what is that?
Yeah.
It's just a lack of knowledge and information. But yeah, you're right, sorry.
Reikios, again with the hardware, says, just to agree with those others who see hardware as the issue, there is a successful Linux platform which is sold to millions. It's called, can anyone guess?
Android?
It's called Android. And the one thing you might notice is that you can't go into a phone shop and fail to find an Android phone. Yes, more votes for hardware there. Sultan of Swing says, Windows 8 isn't bad. I downloaded a consumer preview version of Windows 8, but was pleasantly surprised. Burn him! Spangwidges says, I think Windows 8 is Microsoft's attempt to unify the tablet and console marketplace.
It is.
Which is really the only way they'd get anyone to use their awful tablets. Well, that's... So Unity is the same thing, isn't it?
I think it is, really.
And Note
yeah.
3, really.
Even, which is kind of ironic when there's no tablet interface for those things. I mean, at least, you know, Microsoft's released its Surface tablets this week, and there's some kind of unification, you know, use the tablet, go back to your desktop, yeah. It's the same thing.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense.
I think it's the wrong strategy. I use a tablet completely differently to the way I use a desktop. I'm not expecting the same interface.
Well, their attempt to unify the tablet and console marketplace, they'll worry about bringing the desktop into that fold later when that's all working. If they succeed in this, then we're all pretty much boned.
Whoa.
Anonymous Penguin S.
Loads of responses.
Many, 30 odd.
That's brilliant.
I bought a new Dell this year, Ubuntu 11.10 pre-installed. I hope this was a guarantee for flawless hardware support and a marvellous out-of-the-box Linux experience. Wrong. She's had to reinstall Ubuntu completely and figure out a workaround for easy scrolling using the touchpad. That's appalling, isn't it? If you buy it pre-installed, that's the whole point. If this had been my first Linux experience, I would have really hated myself for not buying the Windows license. The price difference wasn't that big.
No, and as you just said, it shouldn't be about price. You know, the fact that you often feel that Linux is on those really cheap laptops so that people can install their pirated version of Windows and get the laptop for as cheap as possible. But, you know, it shouldn't be that way. It should be more like Project Sputnik, which is Dell's collaboration with Canonical. And that's Ubuntu 12.04, and it looks fantastic.
That's a proper high-end laptop isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it goes both ways. Well, for example, for the Raspberry Pi, if you put Windows on that, it would suddenly triple the price. So, yeah. I mean, obviously, it has that low-end...
And imagine how it would run.
Yeah.
I mean, just... Yeah, yeah.
You're right. That's why I really like the idea... I'm probably biased on that subject, but I really like the idea of having Android as a sort of unified platform for the desktop and the mobile devices, because it's far more accessible. If we make Android to work as if it was a desktop platform, then everything is kind of sorted for Linux, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. And Android becomes the touch interface.
Yeah.
A few people have said that. Spitch102 says, computing is being redefined by touch interfaces, advances in cellular communications, an onslaught of powerful enough and cheap ARM system on chips, and the takeover of solid-state storage. vertically integrated electronics giants, Apple and Samsung, Android and iOS, and that's just the client side. Linux has already claimed a huge part of this new frontier with Android, and will go on to conquer more. Linux isn't going away and is in fact snowballing. There are a bunch of dying x86-focused distros that need to focus on getting ARM and Touch to just work, or they will risk falling behind. And we've had a couple of people saying that, you know, the same sort of thing. Prolific Puffin says, Windows 8 is deja vu all over again. Everything is changing. Tablets, Android, OEMs. That's more or less the pricey of that.
And that, I mean, with the people have been getting their hands on the new Google Chrome laptop. Yeah. And there was a report, I can't remember who it was, sorry, but they got OpenSUSE, the ARM version of OpenSUSE running on it, and they said it ran really well.
Okay. Well, there you go. And that's what, $250?
Yeah.
I mean, that if you can actually make Android work properly as a desktop and those new devices, the cotton candy, what's it called? Yeah, cotton candy.
Yeah, the little USB stick. Yeah.
That you just plug in the back of your high definition television, off you go. You go full on high performance running Android.
It all feels really positive, you know, in comparison to. Now that the battlefield has become so broad, what with smartphones and tablets and low-powered PCs and servers and desktops as well, you know, Linux, the adaptability of Linux is really making it strong in a way that Microsoft in particular just can't compete.
I used to work in the educational field, and we were trying to push an open source solution. And one of the common arguments was, the reason we use Windows is because we want to teach our students to use what they'll need to use in the real world. And to be fair, that does have a reasonable sound base. But my always argument against that is, you're teaching them now in the real world in 5 or 10 years' time, Windows is going to be different. You know, it doesn't matter what you teach them now. You need them to be able to use a system in a few years' time. And no one knows what Windows is going to be like in 5-10 years' time. And people always said, oh, no, it'll basically be the same. It hasn't changed. Well, look, it has.
Yeah.
Just because it's changed once, we know it will probably change again in the next 5 or 10 years. That argument doesn't hold water.
And if you taught them, you know, using GNOME 2.0 on that Ubuntu release, no, everything would have been fine.
Exactly.
Brian 36 says, love the podcast. What beer are you on? That's a very good question.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Because this month we have been mostly sponsored by St. Austell Brewery's Trelawney.
That was lovely.
Absolutely fantastic.
Ringwood Brewery's Boondoggle, which I liked. I particularly enjoyed that.
I like them all, really.
Gary has been sponsored by Pie Minister Pies and Black Sheep. Apparently they were nice. Although it did sort of annoy me, Gary. I know you're listening to this. Black Sheep only sent 5 bottles. It arrived, he opened the packet, said, oh, 5 bottles, that makes it difficult to share. There are 5 of us.
Yeah, and he put them back in the box, sellotape it, and walked out of the office, which is fantastic.
I don't know, we were talking about educational standards among teachers and their basic numeracy and literacy levels, but certainly when I was a kid, dividing 5 by 5 was possibly among the easiest of all mathematical sums.
Not by the quantity of ale that he wanted to distribute among us.
Anyway, thanks very much, Black Sheep, Ringwood, and St. Austell, for your efforts.
That's fantastic.
We appreciate them.
If you want to get your beer featured on this podcast,
yes,
or indeed your restaurant or your pub, please let us know.
Yep, or your whiskey distillery.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Or well,
did you ever mention that? Oh yeah, I did mention
anything. anything, preferably alcoholic, but even then,
any free stuff, we love it. Let's end on a downer.
Ooh,
no, let's not actually.
No,
let's make this downer like the dip just at the bottom of a ski slope. So this can be our lowest point, and then we can use it to like. That was a hand motion. That doesn't work well on radio. Anyway, let's enact it now. Mike C says, "No future, no future, no future." Linux will never make any inroads into general desktop because the open source community will never get itself united behind one distro.
That's what makes it so strong.
Well, yes. Anyone who thinks that Linux will ever be anything other than a niche operating system for hobbyists or back-end infrastructure services is sadly blinded by either inexperience in the real world or by devotion to impractical ideology. The abject failure of Linux to make any significant desktop inroads. Back in 2008, in the fact of Windows Vista, will only be repeated here, and thanks to MS using its still considerable muscle to bend hardware makers toward closing off their platforms via forcing the adoption of UEFI, which will scare off all but the most brave or technically competent users from trying alternative operating systems from trying it. That was a long sentence. I should have read that first. That's three sentences. Oh, well. Anyway, I disagree, Mike C, as do we all here. We have an outpouring of positivity. What one man's fragmentation is another man's strength through diversity.
I think it's also worth noting that he talks about Microsoft's connection with the industry partners, the hardware manufacturers, but actually Microsoft has really annoyed a lot of the hardware manufacturers recently, and they're becoming increasingly powerful in other channels that making phones and tablets which don't run Windows are not as reliant on Microsoft as they were 10 years ago. And also Microsoft has really annoyed Intel by moving on to ARM as well. That's, he doesn't have the stranglehold on the industry it had 10 years ago.
The PC sales are falling all the time. Tablet sales are going up. Now, if Windows, having that Windows certified sticker isn't the meal ticket that it used to be.
Linux is that diversified operating system.
Plus, tablets, hello. Anyone who thinks Linux will be anything other than a niche operating system or infrastructure for servers is blinded. No.
For starters, the vast majority of smartphones in the world run Linux. That's not niche at all.
That's not niche.
And this year particularly, the explosion of Android tablets, it was pretty enormous, isn't it?
You know, just we've had so much Linux news. It's been, there's lots to talk about, which means it's alive.
However, there is some truth in this desktop struggling thing.
Yeah.
The death of the desktop. You know, Linus has said things. Miguel de Icaza has talked about that.
Halloween and Day of the Dead is near as well.
Yes, El Día de los Dead.
El Día de los Dedos. As English, my people might say, dedos in Spanish is fingers, right?
So. Okay, I'll tell you what, the Day of the Fingers will... Let's have a look
at that. That's a little bit scarier, actually.
Like the Day of the Triffids.
Like Finger Mouse.
No, it's El Día de los Muertos. Just to clarify, I do speak Spanish, so just...
failure of Linux to make significant desktop inroads. Let's examine that. Let's set aside four pages in the magazine issue after next issue.
Yeah, good idea.
Pretty soon.
Talk to the people that count.
Yeah.
Miguel de Icaza.
They know the stuff.
Michael Meeks.
Yeah. See what they say.
Other people. Yes. Great. Positivity.
Woo! No. Okay, good news is that officially we are of recession on this.
Oh, yes, that's true.
So we reach now, again, beyond our own.
I can start using triple ply toilet roll again.
I can start buying beer without feeling guilty. I'm leaving my kids without milk this week. That's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, economy.
They'll still be without milk. You just won't feel guilty.
And with that outpouring of positivity, we come to the end of episode 20. See you all in 2 weeks.
Bye.